Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert, and I'm glad to welcome you back to our program, featuring cutting-edge conversations with business leaders and creative luminaries, tailored to global security professionals. Today, we're bringing you a conversation between Steve and ISF analyst Dan Norman. Steve and Dan discuss the overall direction of the security profession in the current climate, and how to build a team and culture to promote secure practices throughout your organization.
Thank you for joining me, joined today by Steve Durbin at the ISF. And today we're going to be covering some of the key findings from our recent ISF deliverable, Human-Centered Security. So Steve, we started this project at the beginning of lockdown, and we've really seen a change in rhetoric in the media and an acceptance of talking about topics like people, psychology, mental health, stress management, all in the sphere of security. We're seeing now this becoming an important topic in the media. Why do you think that organizations in particular are paying close attention to this topic, to human-centered security?
I think one of the things about it, Dan, is that when an organization traditionally has looked at security, it's tended to focus perhaps a little bit more on process, on technology. And what the lockdown has done is really shine a spotlight on the fact that there's another component to that, which is people. What we've seen with people working remotely is that we don't have, or as an organization anyway, we don't have the level of perceived control that we might have had before if they were in an office, if they were using standard corporate equipment, because they could be coming into our corporate systems using their home equipment, for instance. They could be using mobile devices. And so the whole environment has changed very significantly. And so we also have to begin to think about just the health of the individual too, because that impacts, I think, as came out in the report, that impacts hugely the way in which they then come to technology, the way in which they come to do their job. And we've often sort of joked about, you know, somebody having a bad day and all of that kind of thing. But I think that a lot of the research, certainly that you looked into as part of the program that you were putting together, really did point to there being links between the way that people feel and their ability then to implement security practice, whether it be good or just what they were used to. So I think a whole variety of different things have happened.
In our ISF survey, almost 70% of respondents said that people were the highest priority out of people, process, and technology. If our members think this, then why do you think that budget for people-related initiatives receives so little investment?
I think that the people piece has always been a real challenge for security, because we do things as people. We're not predictable. I think back to the insider threat report that we produced some while ago now. You know, and we talked about people fitting into different categories of insider. You know, they could be a negligent insider. They could be a malicious insider. They could be an accidental insider. If you drill down into that, you've got all sorts of different elements of people behavior that's in there. So it's very difficult to prove effectiveness, to demonstrate that return on investment. And I think security awareness in particular has probably had some really bad press in the past because you can't measure that return on investment. Whereas with some other things, of course, if we're talking about technology, much easier to do.
No, I completely agree. I think another point here is about the perception of human-centered security, of psychology and culture. And many technologically minded security professionals, which a lot of the people in our industry are, they're more comfortable with tech, with coding, but less comfortable with the topics like psychology and culture. Why do you think this is, and where can security professionals start to become more aware of psychology, people, culture?
I think some of it is historical. I think that if you look at where traditionally security people have come from in their careers, you know, they've come from a very technical background. Maybe some of them still work within an IT department. So we're talking about them being focused on the technology component. There's a really interesting piece of research that came out of some work that Mark Ward was doing on the Next Gen CISO, for instance, that really highlighted that overall mix of skills that people were going to have to be bringing to the profession. And what I found very interesting about it was that the technical capability, if you like, that was required in that wasn't as great or was diminishing when you look at some of those softer skills that you've just alluded to there. So I think that there's a combination of things that are going on. I think we're seeing a maturing of the security profession. And that means that we're moving out of this purely technical process-driven environment to having a much broader remit. I think that's one of the first important things to focus on. I think the second thing I would say is that security is becoming all pervasive across an organization. As we become very much more dependent on the use of technology, you can't use technology without securing it. And so we're necessarily having to move into areas that perhaps security people haven't traditionally been in. So we need to understand better, for instance, how sales forces operate. We need to understand better how our supply chains are functioning. We need to understand better the importance of information that we're transferring throughout our organization, throughout the life cycle. So for me, it's about more of a maturing of the profession rather than anything else. And I think it's quite a natural evolution that we're going through.
On that point about maturing, how does an organization with a less mature approach to the human elements of security embark on a human-centered security program?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think that you have to start by really going back to looking at it from a risk perspective. Because for me, increasingly, security is all about the management of risk. There is no such thing, as we keep saying, as 100% security. So therefore, it's always about how you manage risk appropriately. And people do have the potential to be the strongest component in any security chain. But we need to be understanding the risk associated with what we're asking them to do, when we're asking them to do it. We need to have a much deeper understanding of how they are interacting with technology. And there were some really good pieces that came out of the report that you produced that really give some insight and guidance around that. And you're right, we need, I think, if we're going to be really effective in this space, to have a much, much better understanding of psychology, of why we do things as people. And if we just step back from that, that means that security has to work in a very much more collaborative fashion with other skill sets across the enterprise. So human resources is one that immediately jumps to mind. You know, because they are the people who should have some of those more well-defined, mature people management skills. Security doesn't have that. Often when we talk about the delivery of security awareness, I'm a big fan of getting training departments involved, of getting marketing people involved, because they have to sell those concepts, you know, in the market. So why shouldn't they be doing that within the organization as well? So as I think we talk more and more about the need for security awareness and the importance of people in all of that, we quite naturally are going to have to involve other areas of the organization. And for me, that's a really good thing.
So just building on the security awareness piece, we know now from the findings in the report that security awareness in isolation will rarely, if ever, change behavior. What other initiatives have you seen from conversations with organizations should you invest in to change behavior and ultimately the culture of the organization in addition to security awareness?
I think it's about trying to pull together all of the different components. And we mentioned, you know, people, process, technology. You know, yep. Why? What is the importance of that? I'm a big fan of constantly asking this why question. If you come to me with a particular security policy, then you've got a number of routes that you can go. You could either tell me it's corporate policy, so therefore I have to follow it. And some people will just fall in line and do that. Other people may just pay lip service to it. Or you can come to me and you can explain to me the importance of my role in protecting a particular asset in the company, and therefore why we've produced a policy that provides me with guidance as to how I can deal with, manage that particular information asset. You're going to get my buy-in much better by explaining things to me than by telling me. People don't respond well to being told. Yep. I remember talking to a CISO of a Fortune 500 company once who told me that he measured the success of his policies on the number of people who would come to him and ask for changes. Because it showed that they were aware of the policy, they had tried to follow it, and that it was no longer fit for purpose or didn't match the particular business situation they were in. And that was the metric that he was going to use. And I think that's really important for people to remember, particularly in the environment we're operating in, where everything is moving so very much more quickly. And we do have to change rapidly from a security standpoint, and that's different.
Yeah, I like the point there about promoting critical thinking and not just taking things at face value. What kinds of additional skill sets do you think security professionals need to manage cyber threats more effectively? And what can organizations do to complement this?
Mm. I think, as I've said, you know, we're moving towards a requirement for a higher degree of emotional intelligence, a higher degree of understanding how to work with people in the way that they use technology, in the way that they manage information assets. I think that we're going to see a need for very much deeper understanding of some of the psychological elements in why people do what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, you know, financial services organizations, that kind of thing, then they're pretty advanced in looking at that from the business standpoint, not necessarily from the security perspective. A lot of marketing departments will spend a huge amount of time, if you look at it from a fast-moving consumer goods perspective, in trying to understand how you or I might respond to an advertisement, product placement, packaging, that kind of thing. All of those things, I believe, have to move into the security space, because you can't really operate effectively in security anymore without understanding the entire remit and the way in which all of these interconnected pieces join together. And that is a huge departure for most security organizations and departments, because they're not used to doing that.
I completely agree. I think some of the organizations that we've spoken to, they throw a policy at a group of individuals and expect them to adhere to it. But a lot of organizations haven't designed their technology or processes to complement the behavior of the workforce. Mm-hmm. It adds friction and reduces productivity. And I think that's what gives the perception of information security as a disabler rather than an enabler. Just bringing this back up to more of a strategic level, how do you think human-centered security, doing all of these kind of things, can fit into a wider security strategy?
For me, any security strategy first has to have a very clear linkage to the overall corporate strategy. So for me, it starts in the boardroom. It starts with the direction that the organization is taking. And then we look at what are the different components within the enterprise that we need to pull together to support that. So if we look at it then from a security strategy standpoint, there has to be, as I say, this alignment, this linkage. And that necessarily gets over a number of different issues that, again, traditionally security has struggled with, such as funding, for instance, such as right resourcing. And I think that that's something that I always talk to people about, is how can you link what you need to do at the security level with what the business is trying to achieve? Because if you can do that, some of those other issues go away. If you then look at it from the people perspective, most businesses are aligning their people with their overall corporate strategy, right? So the security strategy, if aligned with corporate strategy, is already there. So again, you don't then have some of these discussions with people about why should I do this versus that. And if you then can translate security strategy into people-centric processes, to your earlier point, that reflect the way in which you or I go about doing our jobs, you've already made a huge step forward in terms of how security is going to be perceived and implemented across the organization.
Yeah, I think we've seen that a typical security strategy in this sphere tries to reduce the number of security incidents related to human error or negligence, as well as improving the accuracy of reporting. So in terms of those two key strategic moves for security, what tangible suggestions have you seen in the paper or in conversations with CISOs that you've had that can help improve employee management of cyber threats? And what do you think organizations need to do to enhance the skill set of its workforce?
Yeah, I think that when we look at cyber threats in general, and particularly over lockdown, you know, we've seen an increase in things like phishing.
Yep.
We've seen an increase in denial of service attacks, ransomware, that have been dropped into organizations through perhaps emails and that kind of thing. So, you know, as I'm just talking, you can begin to see that people are at the center of that because somebody somewhere has clicked on something that they shouldn't have. So how do you manage the threat? Well, again, you have to go back to really thinking about how people are using technology, about giving them some very clear guidelines as to what they can do. And it's not just about telling people not to do something. You know, one of the things that always strikes me when I talk to an organization is that they might say to me, we've got a policy that says, you know, you shouldn't click on something. You know, if you think it looks suspicious, it probably is, don't click on it. And my immediate question is then, well, what do I do? If you've told me not to do something, what am I supposed to do? And the answer, of course, is you need to provide them with the contact where they need to go so that they can have the problem resolved. And so we very often forget that piece We're very good, I think, at telling people what they shouldn't be doing. But to be much more effective, we need to flip that. And we need to be telling them what they can do so that they can respond appropriately. And we need to make it easy for them as well to do that. So I think there are a number of things in there. You know, it is about us understanding what the key risks are to our business and therefore what sort of threats we need to be highlighting. It's about making sure that our policies, yes, provide guidelines, but also provide constructive routes for people to follow if they are concerned or if they do want to perhaps develop further some of their security awareness and training. So I think it's about this continuous development process that we need to put in place across the enterprise.
I know this is mostly focused on the people element today, but it's kind of impossible to get away from talking about the role of technology in this problem. Automation and the effective use of technology are normally seen as a catch-all solution when it comes to human behavior, preventing human error and negligence. However, in your opinion, what role does automation, does technology have to play in mitigating the risks posed by human error?
I think that technology does have a huge role to play. I think that, you know, I get very excited about artificial intelligence, particularly for some of the, what I would call more mundane security aspects. So, you know, network monitoring, for instance, you know, machines are very good at that sort of thing. People are not so good at it because we become tired. So I think that as I look forward, the sort of world of security will evolve into us using technology, artificial intelligence in particular, I think, to do those sorts of things, the more mundane, freeing up time for people to do some of the other elements that are much higher value, much more interesting to us. And I think that that does a couple of things. It also solves, partly anyway, the skill shortage, because we're able then to direct human resources into appropriate areas and allow machines to do what they're good at. I'm not of the view that the machine will replace people entirely. I don't see that happening. I do think, though, that we'll get to a position where, and we're starting to see it already with larger organizations, where there is a clear division of labor, if you like, between what the machine is good at, what the people are good at. And as long as we get that right, and that's going to be a lot easier to say than to do, but as long as we can get that bit right, then I think we're moving in the right direction.
So just building on that, it seems you've got quite an optimistic view of where we're going, but the statistics are quite damning when it comes to human error and negligence. I think it was 88% of all security incidents in 2018 were down to human error. That's jumped up to 90% this year. Where do you think we're going with this? Are we getting any better or any worse? And what do we have to do? What do organizations have to do to reduce those statistics?
I think that data is a wonderful thing. And I think that it's quite possible to reach all sorts of conclusions based on an analysis of data. But you wouldn't have to go much deeper than that. You know, you have to ask the question, why are these things increasing? Is it because our use of technology has increased exponentially? So if I think about myself, you know, I'm in the course of a normal day, I'll probably use at least 4 or 5 different pieces of technology to access corporate information systems and do other things. So I think that there's a reason why things are increasing. We're also getting better at measuring. You know, if we're measuring more effectively, we can begin to point at where the problems might lie. So I see that increase in data, in the information that's being provided to us, as being very instructive as to how we then go forward and produce the right levels of awareness, training, and support to people in that regard. And I think that the more information we're gathering, the better equipped we are to understand where there are commonality of failure, for instance. So we can begin to do analysis around the time of day that some of these things take place. And let's be fair, cyber criminals are already doing that. They know what a good time of day is to try and send you an email where they want you to click on it. Yeah. So they've already done that work. It's time for the good guys to start doing something similar.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the attackers have been attacking these innate psychological vulnerabilities that we've had internally. Organizations can use psychological techniques to target those similar internal processes, but for good. Mm. Steve, I just want to thank you for your time today for discussing this paper. Report number 1, the Addressing Psychological Vulnerabilities, is available for download, as is the second paper, the Positively Influencing Security Behavior. So we would recommend downloading both if you haven't done already, and you'll be able to see far more of the content. There's a lot of psychological theory in there that complements our ISF solutions. So please do download and read when you get some time to do so. But thank you very much for joining myself and Steve. And Steve, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll be back with a conversation with Steve and Thomas Earle, a best-selling IT author and the founder of Arquitura Education, which offers vendor-neutral training and certification programs. Steve and Thomas will discuss how to resolve the skills shortage, the purpose of vendor-neutral training, the coming disruption of digital transformation, and more. Here's a preview of that conversation.
If you have highly qualified individuals that understand not just current security measures, current cybersecurity practices, preemptive practices, but also understand where all this is going in the next year or two, and can then consult and advise on how a given project can be rolled out to ensure an acceptable level of risk, an acceptable level of security controls, while still meeting business goals, while still getting the necessary budget and support, then it can move ahead. And I think that that is something that organizations sometimes overlook now because they are too concerned about keeping up with their competitors just in terms of automation adoption in general.
We look forward to bringing you the full conversation. In the meantime, we invite you to tune into our catalog of video and podcast episodes, all of which you can find at securityforum.org. We invite you to follow the audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd be so grateful if you'd recommend us. Growing our subscriber numbers helps us reach new audiences and helps us continue to bring you these timely discussions. Join in the conversation on our LinkedIn page by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. You can also directly download from ISF's website the research, practical tools, and guidance that we discuss in conversations like these. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.